Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets for the month of July today, and Dr. Ron Scharf is with us. Dr. Scharf is a regular on this program. He is an 85 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell with an extensive background in all sorts of veterinary medicine. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Get in line early. The lines tend to load up very quickly, and there are a couple of open lines at the moment. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook if you wish. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but we love to hear from you verbally. And that's 1-800-348-2551. Hey, Ron, nice to have you back. How's the summer?
The summer is great, Ray. It's great to be back. And, you know, anytime we don't have a torrential downpour, I'm a happy guy.
Yeah, it's been something.
And thunder and lightning and trees down. But otherwise, things are really good.
Good.
The animals are good. I don't have as many thunderstorm phobias as I would have expected, given all the storms that we've had. Don't ask me why.
And some pets really freak out.
Oh, big time.
Which is worse, cats or dogs?
Oh, cats are mostly unfazed compared to dogs. Dogs are frantic, some of them. Not, I'm talking a few percent of the population, but they're frantic, and I talk to a lot of people about ways to mitigate against them freaking out.
Without medication.
Well, that's the last step. If the other factors don't do the job, then that's the last thing we do. But there are things you could do. You can try to get them into an interior room, a place that doesn't have windows so that they can't hear as much and they can't see as much, even if it's a big closet. You put a loud music on with a strong bass beat. Okay, it could mask the sound a little. Some dogs benefit from these things called thunder shirts, which is like a tightly wrapped torso wrap for them. It just makes some dogs feel more secure.
Really?
Yeah.
That's odd.
And there's a few other things that you could do, and then if it still doesn't do the job, we look at pharmaceuticals.
You know, you mentioned loud music, and last night I was playing loud music, and fairly loud, and the cat was curled up on a chair and completely unfazed.
Yeah.
It wasn't rock music, though.
No. No. They're unfazed about a lot of those things, unless there are certain sounds that'll set a cat off as being...
Kenny G, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Sorry, Kenny.
I don't have Kenny G in my house, so I can't speak to that.
All right.
But that could be. Who knows?
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Lisa in Montgomery. Lisa, you're up.
Hi. I have a behavioral question. I rescued a mother cat at the end of April with her 5 3-week-old kittens, and I kept her in my basement while she was nursing them separate from my other animals. She was, for the record, an excellent mother. Temporarily, I placed two of the kittens, and it didn't work out, and they were just away for a few hours, and they were in someone else's house that had a cat. So I brought them back, and it seemed at that point she had started to freak out, and she hissed at them. She hissed at all her kittens. They were about 6 weeks old at that time. So from that point, they were all placed, and she was placed in a home with one of her kittens. And in the beginning, she adjusted very well in the beginning. She was still nursing that one kitten that I think at that point was 8 weeks old. And a freak accident happened to that little kitten. She had fallen from the stairs and broke her leg. She had to have a major operation. And when she returned home, the mother cat rejected her at that point, and she was hissing and growling. My friend was concerned because, you know, the little kitten was had just undergone an operation, so she kept the mother in the sunroom and had the kitten in the rest of the house. And every time she let the mother out, the mother cat would freak out and hiss at her and growl. And she was not spayed yet. At that point, a few weeks later, she has been spayed. The relationship still hasn't seemed to improve. I think the mother still growls at her and no longer wants to play with her. So my son is concerned because she misses that point when she first got them where they were playing and affectionate and chasing each other. She's concerned and wondering, you know, what she should do to support that relationship, if there's something in particular she needs to do, because she's looking forward, or she's just hoping that they'll go back to being friends again.
Okay.
Okay. So they might or they might not go back to being friends again, Lisa, but there are things you could do to encourage that to happen. And first off, I would use a pheromone that I've mentioned many times on the show called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, that you could either spray or plug in. And oftentimes, friction between cats will be a little mitigated by them having that synthetic pheromone in the air that we can't smell, but they can, number one. Number two, I would try, have your friend discover what makes mom cat the most happy and the most secure and purring the most and just enjoying stuff, whether it's petting or giving her treats or just a listening behavior which makes the mom that happy, and then trying during those periods to introduce the kitten in a very non-threatening way. In other words, not all at once, not too quickly, and keeping on plying the mom cat with those treats or with those that petting. In other words, to try to reintroduce the concept to mom that the kitten could be construed as being a positive rather than a negative thing. Okay, it sounds like she's insecure, and every time she was confronted with a kitten that had a bad smell from the other first household or from the vet hospital after the surgery, there were new smells that kind of alienated her, scared her, made her insecure, whatever it was. And if necessary, if sometimes the temporary use of a medication that makes her less prone to freaking out might facilitate that. It would depend. Sometimes the behavior modification measures themselves would do it. Sometimes they need a little chemical persuasion.
So you think it was the smell that caused this?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so
what else would it be?
I don't know.
So she's, so you think she just felt threatened?
Yes.
And insecure is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's rocking her boat, her secure home boat, so to speak. And I think that if she could be reassured in a slow, gradual, non-threatening way that this kitten could mean good things. In other words, they might cuddle together. They might play together.
Okay. So you don't advise for them to be separated?
Well, if all else fails, then yes. That would be the last step.
What about a bath?
Okay.
In other words, if the cat has a scent from the hospital, couldn't you bathe the kitty cat?
Yeah, but that scent is ancient history at this point. They came home from the hospital a month or two ago with a broken leg fixed. Now she's 8 weeks. So that was six, if I understood correctly.
Yeah.
So it's not that the smell is still in the air. It's just that the smell, I'm assuming, you know,
yeah,
when you're talking with what goes on inside a cat's brain, all bets are off, and you're just making your best stab at it.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that it was that foreign smell that scared the cat. Maybe there was some, who knows what they smell? Who knows what an animal can smell? Maybe they can smell the smell of an animal hospital, bad smells. In other words, the smell of fear. When an animal, dog or cat, have scent glands in the back of their anal area, they're called anal sacs.
Yeah.
And when they're scared, a lot of them, especially dogs, can clamp down and expel that smell. So in my mind, that is the smell of fear, even if it's not the kitten's own anal sacs. Maybe it's another cat in the animal hospital or a dog. And then maybe that smell got onto the kitten. I'm totally guessing.
Yeah.
Here.
All right. Well, okay. Lisa, we got to move it along, but thank you very much for
good
the
luck,
call.
Lisa.
Let's go to Roger in Vermont. Roger, you're on. Hello, Raj. You're there?
Taking my call. Yes.
Go ahead.
My call. My dogs have mange. I tried to use.
Well, you're breaking up, Roger.
Bad connection, Roger. Give it one more try. Otherwise, we'll have you try again later.
Your dogs have mange. The main thing I'd like to know is which kind. Is it sarcoptic or is it demodectic?
I don't know that. They got it in New York at Lake Ontario, and it's really bad on one of them, and the other one, she's not as bad.
Okay. Is it extremely itchy?
Yes, very, very. All the time they're scratching.
Okay. If it's mange, if that's a diagnosis that a veterinarian has come to, and if it is the sarcoptic mange, that is something that we can get. It's an example, a great example of what's called a zoonotic disease. We can get it. In us, it's called scabies. You don't want to get it. Okay. It's not a killer for us, but it's something that you'd much rather avoid. In an animal, it could be fixed. It depends. What you have two dogs, and one has it in a bad way, and one has it in a mild way?
Yes.
Okay. And have you seen a vet about it?
I've seen a vet, and they gave me some the once a month treatment for the back.
Okay.
And then they gave me a recipe for oil and soap and water.
Okay.
And I actually have it. I have it myself.
Uh-huh.
And it's worse than poison ivy.
Yep.
And so, what else? Like, who can they? Would they? Can they possibly get a shot?
Yes.
Okay.
They can't
okay.
get a shot. It's off-label, but it's used a lot. It's used a lot. It's a cow drug. It's called Ivomec, I-V-O-M-E-C. It's got to be administered carefully, otherwise they can get bad effects, side effects like neurological things. And so, but that having been said, Roger, if you administer that stuff carefully at the right dose, then the likelihood of having a side effect is very small.
Okay.
Okay. I've gotten rid of all the carpets and their bedding and everything. And so I thank you very much for your help there, Doctor.
Good luck, and Roger, with your dogs and yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure thing.
Bye now. So if he gets scabies from that, then he takes the same cow shot?
No. That's the problem. The problem, it's kind of funny that we as veterinarians have way more latitude in what we could treat our animals with than an MD would treating a person. And that cow drug would not be used on a person. So I don't know what kind
somehow that's reassuring. You know?
Well, if you're an animal, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to, yeah, that's it, Zach. The break. That's what I meant there. We'll take a break now.
Support for WAMC comes from The Cheese Traveler, Delaware Avenue, Albany, New York, a full-service cheese, sandwich, and specialty shop now offering tastings, classes, and Friday night cookouts, thecheesetraveler.com. SPAC, presenting the Bolshoi Ballet through August 1st, performing Don Quixote with four performances, SPAC.org. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, Sharon, Connecticut, and Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Physicians specializing in osteopathic manual medicine, Goldman, TRIPP.net. And Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC and our Pets and Vets program. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Kathy in Munson, Mass. Kathy, you're on.
Yes. Hello there.
Hi.
Thank you for
Hi, Kathy.
My call. I have a ragdoll who's 3 years old. I did get him when he was 6 months old, and he had started out with Trichomonas. He was treated for that. And then he has had a series of urinary tract infections. And they did do, the veterinarian performed an ultrasound. And they did detect three little tiny grains of sand. This one was when I first got him, when he was about 9 months old, of, let's see what the report said. Bladder is large, three tiny, 1-1.9 millimeters of little grains of sand, calculi, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes, that's perfect.
And that, you know, they did probably pass. They did treat him with antibiotics, but he's probably maybe every 6 months gets a urinary tract infection.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it's behavioral or not. I know he went away for a week. He misses people. He's like a little dog, so I've even had the vet assistant stay at the house with him overnight to keep him company. And we just got back a few weeks ago from vacation, and sure enough, when we got back, he was peeing outside of the box and pooping, and they said they saw a little trace of blood, put him back on the antibiotics. He hasn't been on dry food for over a year. Veterinarian did suggest not putting him on dry food.
My first question, so that's good.
Yes, so that's been a year since he's had dry food. Cranberry Comfort he's on, a little bit of that sprinkled in his food when I feed him. And then after his antibiotic regimen, he was only on it 10 days. He's on a little probiotic every other day on his wet food. So I'm not sure if it's a behavioral thing.
Right.
I know when we did bring him home initially, he was trying to jump in our sink and go to the bathroom mm-hmm. in the sink.
Kathy, you are not alone in wondering if it's a behavioral thing. The entire veterinary profession is wondering the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Because there was a lot of overlap between things that happen in cats that make us think that it is not purely a physical thing, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the reasons why we used to call it UTI or feline urological syndrome. Now we call it feline lower urinary tract disease.
Uh-huh.
And there are sometimes that antidepressants are used. I mean, women. My understanding is that women can get an interstitial cystitis that'll be treated with antidepressants, and some cats also sometimes uh-huh. need something like that as well. But
uh-huh.
I'm glad that he's off the dry food. What I recommend, Kathy, is that you get him onto a prescription food, not only
okay.
canned, but prescription canned for this problem. There are various companies' choices.
Mm-hmm.
Royal Canin has one, Hills has one, Purina has one. So in other words, your cat has a choice. If he doesn't like the first one you try, you always want to, when you introduce an animal, especially a cat, to a
uh-huh.
new food, is introduce it gradually, give him some space, give him some plenty of time to, you know, convert over. Even if he's eating 50-50
uh-huh.
or 75% of prescription canned food, it's better
uh-huh.
than nothing. And there are
uh-huh.
a lot of things in there that are put in there to avoid this happening. There's never going to be an ironclad assurance that he won't get it, especially
mm-hmm.
because we don't know the bottom line. We don't know
yeah.
if there's an underlying infectious cause or neurological cause or something like that. There's a lot of work being done about it. But I would do the prescription food. Stay away from all dry food just like you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen many instances, Kathy, where a cat goes on the prescription food for a few years
uh-huh.
after they say they've been blocked or whatever, and then people get tired of feeding it, and then they put them onto an over-the-counter, and bam, they get the problem again, especially if it's an over-the-counter dry food, but not only.
Uh-huh.
So I would just do everything you can to avoid that. Plenty of fresh water available at all times.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cleaning his box out as often as you can because you want
right.
to make it an inviting place.
Yeah,
okay.
I do that. He has multiple boxes, and I do
Excellent.
Them twice a day.
Beautiful. Sometimes some cats don't like certain things about litter boxes, like if they're covered or if they have a scented litter or if they have a clay litter that's too much dust. So most people think that the clumping litter is the best, uncovered
uh-huh.
is the best, unscented is the best,
yeah.
and a number of boxes, one more than the number of cats. So if he's the only one, it would be at least two boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Clean that often. And then beyond that, you ought to be fine, but there's never a guarantee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did buy the Purina. It isn't prescription, though, and it says for urinary tract
yeah.
health. All the canned cat food I have is 1.2 ash. So
okay.
it's low in ash. And the vet says to add some water. I've added, mm-hmm. you know, make it soupy, which
mm-hmm.
I do when he eats it. So
that's
I'm
a good idea.
Sure he's getting that liquid
Excellent.
In him. So.
Excellent.
So
All
that,
right.
I will follow your recommendation, though, with the prescription. Thank you very much.
Another thing you might do, if there is such a high correlation of him getting stressed out when you leave and then coming down with another episode, is
mm-hmm.
maybe think about giving him an anti-anxiety medication for when you're gone.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah,
a little
kitty Xanax or something.
All
yeah.
right. Kathy, thanks
Good
a
luck.
Lot. We're going to go over to Alicia in Ravenna. Alicia, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, Alicia.
Hi. I have a 2-year-old Puebloan milk snake, and a couple of months ago, he's been fine, you know, this whole time, till a couple of months ago, he couldn't shed. So now, you know, I think the humidity was down a little bit, but we've had the humidity high. You know, he has plenty of water to soak in, and he still can't shed. He, you know, looks dry and uncomfortable, and it's just sitting on him, and he can't. I don't know what to do for him now. We've tried a reptile shedding aid spray. I've taken him out and, you know, had him soak in warm water, and then he lets me hold him, so I take a towel and kind of just rub on them, and individual scales will come off, but the rest of it is just staying on them, and I don't know what else we can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is outside of your usual...
Yeah, it's a little outside. I have had some experience with snakes. I used to own two snakes. I loved it. And I could give you some general advice, Alicia, but I do acknowledge that there are colleagues that know a heck of a lot more about reptiles than I do, but I find that a lot of the times these things, did you say the milk snake is 2 years old?
He is 2 years old, yes.
Okay. So
and
a lot
he
of...
He had several successful sheds before this.
Right. I had a snake that for a while had a hard time shedding too. What you want to do is make sure that his diet is a complete and balanced diet for a snake. Number one. Number two, you want to present a gradient of heat in the snake tank. So you want it to be hotter at one end, so the light, if you have one, would be at one end of the box so that the snake's got the opportunity to go to a cooler area if it prefers. And that you not only have water in there for the snake to soak in, but that you have some kind of abrasive thing like a rock or something that he could rub on. And beyond that, if the diet was perfect, you had a gradient of heat that he could choose his comfort zone, you had a coarse surface like a rock or some similar thing or astroturf that he could rub along, I'd take him in and have him looked at by a veterinarian that knows reptiles.
Okay, and you said a variety of food. He was getting frozen mice. Obviously, he grew with that, but...
He withdrew? He what?
He grew.
Oh, he grew.
That. He
right.
was,
okay.
you know, the size of a pencil when we got him, and he grew. Now he's probably as round as your thumb. But because of this issue, he hasn't wanted to eat over the last couple months, so we've been worried about that, too. But he's just, he only got frozen mice, and I don't know if there's anything else we should have been giving him. But...
Maybe live mice.
Okay.
I used to, I used to buy the feeder mice at the store, interestingly enough. The same mouse, when you bought it as a feeder mouse, was less expensive than when you bought it as a pet mouse. But I would dangle it. I would, you know, there a lot of people say you shouldn't just put the prey in the container because the rodent could bite the snake. You don't want that to happen. So I used to just dangle it. If necessary. Of course, you know, you run the risk of your own self getting bitten. Far be from me to advocate a human or a listener getting bitten by a rodent. You could get diseases, so that's my caveat. That's just how I did it, okay? It depends on the snake. I doubt that it's due to frozen mice compared to live. I would look first at the diet. You know, get the gradient, get the coarse surface, the rock, the astroturf. But the diet is the first thing I would zero in on.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Alicia.
Good
luck.
Thank you very much. Now, you say you've had two snakes as pets over your life. Do they have any personality? Can you tell one from the other?
Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They definitely have personality. One liked to be handled. The other one didn't.
You're kidding me.
More edgy. One was more prone to get startled or angry at emotion that I would do or that somebody else would do. I remember... when my daughter, who was probably about 9 at that time, was taking the snake in to show it to school, that I told her a million times, don't move fast. Don't move fast. Don't put the snake close to your face and don't move fast. And I said it literally a dozen or two times. She moved fast. She got bitten. But bite from, that was a rat snake. It was a court, tiny teeth.
Really?
Tiny teeth.
The things I learned.
And it's not that big a deal. You know, it's worse if you pull back. Then if you just let them bite, and then you have these two tiny scratches. Now I'm talking a small snake. I'm talking, you know, 4 or 5 foot snake, an inch and a half in diameter, a corn snake, a rat snake. They do have different personalities. I'm not going to say that.
Amazing. So they're not cuddly. You can't sit by the fire and the snake will
Nah,
sit in
they'll
your
move
lap.
Around. They'll move around. They want to move around. They're confined to the crate. They're confined to the cage, the tank rather. They're going to want to take the opportunity of moving around. They're not going to want to just stay in one place if they have the opportunity.
Okay.
And they're going to want to hide. You know, they're going to want
so
to hide.
So you just leave the snake in the case. So why don't you just get a picture of a snake?
Correct.
What's the difference?
It's good to watch them.
All right.
They're beautiful. And when I would take them out, I would put them into a bathtub and watch them moving around in the bathtub. It's kind of mesmerizing in a way. I found it very pleasurable.
Well, all right. All right. You're easily amused. Bonnie and Greenwich, you're up. Bonnie.
Oh, yes. Hi. I actually have two questions. have a Shun dog that's half King Cavalier and half Bichon Frise, and he's about almost 2 years old. And I was wondering, is it a bad idea to have him with me when I'm watching an emotional or a scary movie? Because last night I was watching 12 Years a Slave, and I felt like he was kind of upset about it. And I thought, well, I wouldn't have my child in the room with me, and I wondered about that. And then my second question is, he's not very, he doesn't like any dog food. We tried him on raw dog food, and he loves it, but I have a autoimmune disease, and I went online, and it said you shouldn't give your dog raw dog food because of salmonella poisoning if you have an autoimmune disease. And I thought, well, how is that different than my making myself a steak or chicken or something?
So, good question. Good question. So bear in mind, Bonnie, that you are asking something which is really more suitably answered by a human MD or a human parasitologist or infectious disease specialist, whereas I know more about what the animal can have a problem with. But my understanding is that I'm guessing that the supposition is that there could be more bad bugs in the raw meat that's used for dogs than in that used for people, because it may not have as much scrutiny by the regulatory agencies. But I think that ultimately, they're the same or similar salmonellas and E. coli that can cause food poisoning in us as what can cause food poisoning in dogs. You know, thorough washing of the meat for the animal's sake, and then thorough washing of your own hands for your own sake is always a good idea, autoimmune disease or not. But what a lot of people do, Bonnie, that want to feed raw food but are scared of the potential consequences, which could be major for the dog, you know, food poisoning, etc., is to flash the meat for 5 or 10 minutes at a high temperature in the oven and then feed it, because the majority of the bad bacteria are superficial. They're toward the outside of the meat. And so if you flash it so that the very outside is kind of heated up at a high temperature for several minutes, then that would lessen the risk, okay? I don't know if anyone's studying it, but...
I was giving him ground. We were giving him, you know, you get it at the pet food in the frozen section. It was ground. So I don't know, you know, if the salmonella could be ground right into it.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, now the more interesting part of this, if you don't mind me saying so, is the question of whether a dog should sit with you while you watch emotionally wrenching programs.
Well, I'll get to that in 1 minute. Let me just say that, Bonnie, it's not just the handling of the meat that poses the risk, but it's also the dog licking you, or the dog licking their fur and then you petting them, or the dog coughing, or the dog sneezing, not sneezing so much, but don't just think that the handling of the meat is the only risk that there is, okay? That is one of the big things that is raised by people who are not supporters of feeding raw meat to animals, is that people can be exposed to stuff and they don't even realize it, okay?
Oh, okay.
As far as the movie, you broke up for one crucial word. You said you were watching it and you didn't know if it was bad to have something, expose the dog to something. I didn't know if that was...
Just for instance, last night I was watching 12 Years a Slave, and it's just very emotional. The music is wrenching, the screaming of, you know, when the people are being whipped. I mean, it was so emotional. And so the sounds coming out of the TV really were wrenching, and I thought, you know, when my child was young, I wouldn't have let him be in the room with me.
Right.
And here's the dog laying on my lap, laying next to me on the couch, and I thought, I didn't let, every once in a while he would look up and look at the TV, and I thought, is he tense? Is this really affecting him? And is,
Okay, that's a good question. The answer is dependent upon what his upbringing was. And if he was brought up at a month, 2 months, 3 months of age in a household or a place that had screaming and that he had a bad life and bad experience doing it, then yes, that would be upsetting for him. But if he was brought up to, you know, be well-adjusted and non-neurotic and not have fears and phobias, then I don't think it would be, I don't think it's a problem. And if it were, you would have picked up on his tension or stress. It would not have been the kind of thing that you would have to wonder about. He would be acting stressed out. He would look nervous, and you would know it. And then that would tell you to not let him be there. But I don't think that you have anything to worry about from what you're describing.
Okay, Bonnie, thank you. Now, can dogs, distinguish images on a screen? In other words, will they know, oh, that's a person on the screen?
Yeah, some people say that their dogs can differentiate images on a screen. I find that if that's true, it's true of a very small minority of dogs. I'm not even sure if it's true at all.
Okay, so I seem to recall never having too many pets that would care too much about the screen, but I remember one. And I don't remember if it was a friend's dog or whether it was a cat of mine that could see a person on a baby, for instance, on the screen and reacted to it.
I think it's the noise. I think it's the audible part.
You think it's the sound?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's very common. Doorbell rings on the TV and animal goes crazy that there's someone at the door. Or there's barking going on the TV and the dog is, you know, pricked up its ears and is, you know, vigilant. But the images, the flat images, I don't personally think that dogs are able to discern what the human actions on the screen are without the sound on.
All right. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It is Pets and Vets, and we will get back to the phones in a moment. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York. Protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, and now also in Rhinebeck. With local produce, vegetarian, and vegan hot dogs and burgers. Cold drinks, sunscreen and bug spray for summer cookouts, sunflowernatural.com. The Clark Art Institute, Williamstown, Massachusetts, now reopened with a newly expanded campus and the return of the permanent collection on view, clarkart.edu. And Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC, plastic reconstructive and hand surgery and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santa Marina, berkshirehealthsystems.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets today. Back to the phones in just a second. 1-800-348-2551. First, though, Ron, here is one via email from Paul in Johnstown. Our neighbor has a small dog that is very territorial. The dog's yard is fenced. When the owner is with the dog is silent. However, the dog charges to the fence and barks loudly and constantly when a pedestrian passes by or a neighbor comes out into their yard. Do the anti-bark devices that emit a high-pitched sound work? The dog's owner thinks the device will hurt the dog. Does such a device harm the dog? Thank you, Paul in Johnstown.
So, Paul or Paula, I didn't catch which.
It is Paul.
Paul, I don't have any experience with the high-pitched sound collars. I do have experience with two other kinds, and those are shock collars and citronella collars. I think the shock collars are commonly considered to be inhumane, number one. Number two, the citronella collars emit a spritz of citronella, which goes upward toward the nose anytime the sensor feels the vibrations in the dog's voice box, the larynx. And I think that that is not considered to be inhumane. However, if the dog is having a neurosis, if the dog is left out alone too long, then they could get neurotic and develop neurotic tendencies to self entertain themselves. And so if the dog, for instance, is too barky because it's been left out to fend for itself, and dogs are social, and they're kind of getting bored with it, then that's a bigger issue than just needing a collar. I cannot tell you about the collar that you're talking about, the sound. Personally, I don't think I would use it in my own dog, nor recommend it for my own patients. I just don't know that these devices, number one, are safe for the dog, and number two, even if they are safe, how do you know they won't malfunction and give the wrong frequency or the wrong volume? And it just sounds too tricky to me.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Nancy in Stamford, Vermont. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I recently took in a cat, well, actually a kitten, that was caught in a trap. We brought him in the house and put him down, and he immediately went over to the litter box and used it. Number one, my question is, could it have belonged to someone because he was so good at it, if you will, immediate?
He could have belonged to someone already, Nancy, but it's also true that a lot of cats take to litter boxes very quickly. They want something that they could dig in to deposit their business and usually cover it, and that's the most accessible thing that they could find in a typical house.
Okay. Uh-huh. And my son, the cat's been here a couple of days, and he's sneezing nonstop.
Mm.
Could it perhaps be an allergy situation?
Yes, absolutely. People are often allergic to either cat's dander or more commonly saliva. So in other words, it's not just the hair, but there could be an antigen, a protein in the saliva that when the cat grooms itself gets on the hair, and then the hair is touched by a person, or the hairs fly around the house because they shed, and it's breathed in by a person or in some kind of close proximity.
Yeah.
And so if that's true, the more that cat is brushed and bathed, even just a plain water bath, a sponge bath, it's possible that the brushing will diminish how much hairs are flying around the house, and the water bath once a week, twice a week with a sponge could lessen the amount of antigens on the skin, et cetera.
Huh.
So it depends on a lot of things. I'm not an allergist. I'm not an MD. So I'm speaking almost more as a layperson when I answer the question than otherwise.
I would say that my couple of my kids are allergic to some extent. And the brush really works, Nancy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the cat loves it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them do. A lot of them do.
So that's a good way to go. Thanks, Nancy. We appreciate the call. Denise in, where are you calling from, Denise?
Hi. I'm calling from Harrison, New York.
Okay. Well, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I adopted a few years ago a 70-year-old puppy mix from the pound. And she's been a great dog. The only problem that I have with her is that whenever she's outside, she tends to chew up anything and everything, as far as the cedar shingles on my house to solar lamps to my flower beds, you name it, she chews it up. I do give her rawhide bones. I do give her regular bones from the store to chew on. She has plenty of toys. So I don't know if it's a separation anxiety thing she's having. Or also, when I had gotten her in the beginning, everybody said to crate train her. So when I left the house so that she wouldn't, you know, go to the bathroom in the house, I would put her in a crate, and she does fine. She likes to go on a crate and everything. So I don't know if maybe she feels scared without her crate or what is going on with her. But I can't seem to break her out of chewing everything.
Is she accompanied outside, Denise, or is she on her own?
Nope, she does. She has, I have another dog outside, and he's very well outside. He does pretty good, but I've noticed lately he's starting to pick up some of her bed habits as far as getting into the flower bed.
Bummer.
And
you
got to
look at... You got to look at the dog, Denise, and try to figure out, are they doing it for their own entertainment, or are they doing it because they're nervous without a person there? If there's a dog that's been socialized to a person at that crucial age of 6 to 14 weeks of age or thereabouts, and they have not been socialized to a dog, then it's possible that a dog is not as good a company for that particular dog as a person. And if you're leaving them out without a person, without your being there with them, then it could be a stress thing and it could be a stress response. On the other hand, it could just be that they're entertaining themselves. And I would want to know, is that dog getting tired playing with the other dog, running around with the other dog, or is she not getting that much exercise?
Right. I don't really know. I mean, they seem to play very well together, and they have plenty of yard to play in. I have her on one of the collars that keeps her in a circumference of the yard, and she pretty much has the run of the yard of whatever she wants to do. She could do as yeah. long as, you know, basically as long as it's not okay. chewing things up.
Okay.
And she does know, you know, right from wrong. If you scold her, she right. knows she has the wrong.
So if that dog at 2 months of age, Denise, was brought up without enough attention and it kind of provided by necessity its own entertainment, so to speak, by fixating on chewing things, then it might be hard to break her of that habit. What I would suggest is that you don't let her stay out the majority of the time only with another dog, but rather you be there, that she is with you, number one, and number two, that you give her so much exercise that she's totally tuckered out on a daily basis. And then if you do that for a week or two, see what happens with the chewing. Because if she stops chewing as much, then it might be something that's not as ingrained in her. And you're proving that she does need more exercise and more human attention. On the other hand, if it makes no difference, I'm thinking she was brought up at 2 or 3 months of age with that as her only entertainment, her only gratification, so to speak. And it would need more of a behavioral modification course to try to break her of that.
All right.
Okay.
Denise, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Jamie in Springfield, Mass. Jamie, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to, first, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add, you were talking before the break about dogs recognizing animals or people on TV. And
yeah.
I have four little dogs. One of them in particular notices animals, especially dogs and cats, on TV when they're moving. When they're not moving, she couldn't tell at all.
Is the volume off?
My volume's off.
So the volume is totally off, and the
dog... Oh, I'm sorry. On the TV, you mean? I thought you meant on my
sorry.
Radio.
No, I heard you perfectly, Jamie. I heard you perfectly. I want to know, does that one dog of yours watch the images when there's no volume coming out of the TV?
But the when I noticed it was when I had a younger child, and I was showing the movie, the Disney movie, That Darn Cat, and they have a Siamese cat in that movie that goes from left to right to left all the time, and there's people talking in the movie. And she noticed the cat, and she watched the entire movie. She would look to the left and follow it and wait until it appeared again and watch it walk to the right.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Now she notices, it doesn't matter if the volume's on or off. Sometimes they have those medicine commercials with people playing outside with their dogs or Frisbee, and she'll notice if it's a dog flying through the air. And then she stops watching when it's gone.
Well,
looks at me like, what was that?
Jamie, Ray can attest to this. As soon as I said that, I regretted it because I knew that I had to be wrong. And sure enough, there are three lines right now, in addition to yours, there's two others of people that are telling us the same thing.
Well, we'll find out what they say.
That dogs can't see the images. So obviously I'm wrong. And I take it back. I take it all back.
She doesn't notice people. She just notices the animals, I think, that she would notice. And it has
that's
to be
amazing.
Moving.
It is amazing. Yeah.
Jamie, thanks a lot for the call.
Well, thanks for taking the call. I'm loving
sure
your show.
Thing.
Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot. Let's go over to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Well, I guess I'm one of those people that... My neighbors call me the cat whisperer. I have communication with the cats. I use my facial muscles and my understanding is that cats have 51 groups of facial muscles, the same as humans do, and that their expressions, if you can interpolate with the difference in the skull shape, that they're expressing is what you, if you think they're mad, that's what they are. They're mad, and I found that to be true. My two cats frequently watch movies by sitting at the edge of the bed, and they watch people, whether the sound is on or not. I had a cat that used to always get on top of the television when the weather came on and would bat at the cold front as they showed it going across the screen. And
wow.
I had cats with there's a video called Video Catnip, and it plays stupid music in the background, and so you can't hear the animals. And the cat will get up and touch the screen and poke at the screen and walk behind the television
and
see what's back there. And then he comes and looks at me like, well, what's with this?
Oh, I'm trying that.
So
video catnip. Okay.
Yeah, they are cats anyway. I don't know what it is about maybe it's because it's motion, but they are very, very attuned to the television. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I the other night I was watching a movie that was kind of a boring movie for me, but the cats were both sitting there on the end of the bed looking at it intently.
Oh, boy.
Well, if they're that smart, Mark, what I would suggest is that you give them a written test afterwards to ask them what they were watching and prove it. Prove
it
to me.
You know, I have my ways, and they know, they come up, they communicate with me in ways, like when they want to be brushed, they come up and they give me a little pat on the leg, and then they go to the area that I usually brush them at and wait for me to, you know, do their thing. And,
that one I've heard of. Yeah.
And so they know how to tell me what they want.
Oh, yeah, they communicate.
They open the door to the back of the house and let themselves in and out. I can't stop that without locking it.
Yeah.
They turn the latch and they're out, and they pull the door open. They go out,
well,
and they come in, the same thing. So they
it's true.
They are very adaptable, and I think it's the motion rather than the sound that attracts them.
Well, you'll have to tune into Sharknado 2 tonight, which I believe is on, and see if the cat enjoys that.
You know, I got a kick last month, Mark, from a cat came to me for an exam, and I was watching him walk around the floor, and he went over to my cabinet and to the bottom drawer, and he pulled the drawer out. I mean, there was a knob on the drawer, so fine. I've seen that once or twice. Then he got into the drawer. Okay, I've seen that once or twice.
Yeah.
Then he pushed the back of the drawer away from the wall and got out of the drawer, and I started getting alarmed at that point that he's going to get buried in the furniture in the cabinet that's bolted to the...
Yeah, sure.
But no, we got him out. But, I mean, some cats are intrepid. They're just amazingly adaptable. It's amazing.
My mother's cat is terribly afraid of thunderstorms, and she will open the cabinet door under the sink, go in the
cabinet. Oh, a cat.
And then pull the door shut behind her.
Wow, yeah. Good for her. That's a smart thing to do.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call.
Good
we appreciate
you, Mark.
It. Let's go on
thanks
over
a lot.
To Marion in Fultonville. Marion, you're on.
Hello. I guess I'm the third one.
Yes, you are.
I have had dogs all my life, dogs and cats and every kind of animal, you name it. This is the first time I've ever had one who recognizes he doesn't like dogs and horses. And if he sees them on TV, there is a commercial for a pet store. And when he hears the music, he'll run to the TV and sit there and wait for the dog to come on and start barking and barking and barking.
Wow. Have you taken that dog to the store that plays the same music when the dog's in the store?
Why would you do that?
To give the dog the idea that hearing that same music on the TV would be something to bark at, because it means something good's coming.
But they wouldn't be playing the music at the store, would they?
Why not? I don't know.
Anyhow, this is the first time I've had little dogs, and I've usually had bigger dogs, and they've never paid any attention to it. But I have a question.
Sure.
They will, we're out in the country, and if there's a rabbit or anything in the yard, turkey, deer, you name it, or even a person on the road, anything that's moving, they will start barking. But do they have some kind of communication? Because when one dog starts barking, and then they'll switch to a kind of a howl, and the other dog will pick up that howl, and do they communicate?
They communicate. They do. I'm not an animal behaviorist or ethologist, but they definitely communicate. And what they're saying when they change from a bark to a howl, I'm not sure. But there are books that you could read that'll give good possibilities. People that study animal behavior could answer that question much more than I could.
There's something primal about howling. I remember dogs in the neighborhood when I was a kid. When the fire whistle would go off, which sounded very much like a howl, they would start howling.
I have that because my vet hospital is next door to the firehouse.
Yeah.
And so when the siren goes off, there are dogs that are howling. They look like they're having a good time. I mean, they don't look like they're distressed when they're howl. They're good. They're okay. They're engaged. So, they're saying
can
something.
I have one more question.
Very quickly. We only have about 30 seconds left, so go ahead.
I have a neighbor, which I just found out, her grandson has a small dog, which he crates But he goes to work like at 7 in the morning. The dog is in the crate all day until like 7 in the evening. Is that... I call it cruelty, but I don't know.
All right, we're almost out of time here,
Doc. You're saying 12 hours in the crate?
The dog is in the crate from 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening while the...
Okay. If it's something that the dog got used to and was trained to be able to do, then it's not necessarily cruel. If it's something that they got taught to not be comfortable with, then it could be cruel. And by the way, let me just get in, Marion. You're the third, but not the third of three. There's one more person who's not going to get on who also says her poodles recognize animals on TV.
All right, we are out of time. Thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf for being here. Support comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of hydrangeas and blooming perennials. Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sundays, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. The Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering accommodations for Berkshire travelers for over 200 years. 10 minutes from Tanglewood, RedLionInn.com. And Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years. AlarmsofBerkshireCounty.com. Thanks again to Dr. Scharf, Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for being here. The news is next.